Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks, and let's begin today with the long, elusive quest for pay equity between the sexes. Back in 1945, Massachusetts became the first state in the country to pass an equity pay law. But today, women in Massachusetts make an average, on average, 18 cents on the dollar less than men. African American and Latino women make about half what men make. So over the weekend, some 70 years later, an updated pay equity law went into effect to try to address that. The new law seeks to clarify what constitutes wage discrimination. Among the key provisions, it prevents employers from asking potential employees what they made at their previous job. Here's Boston Mayor Marty Walsh speaking to NPR's Scott Simon this past weekend about the importance of that.
I think it allows the employer to actually gauge the salary on a woman's ability and resume rather than compare it to what they might have gotten in another job. Generally, men won't ask a man what they made in their previous job when they're basing a salary.
Joining us to talk about the Massachusetts Equal Pay Act, what it does, what it doesn't do, is Victoria Budson. She's founder and executive director of the Women and Public Policy Program at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Victoria Budson, thank you so much for coming in. Good to have you.
Nice to be here.
Also with us is Walter Foster. He's a partner with the firm Eckert Siemens, specializing in employment law. And Walter Foster, welcome to you. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we want to encourage a call from you. We want to hear from you. Do you think this law will bring us closer to true pay equity in Massachusetts? What's your experience with this issue? What questions do you have about this new law? We've got some experts here who can answer them. So give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. So, Victoria, let me start with you. What are some of the key things in this updated law that are important in your view?
Well, there's a number of things in this bill which are both important and firsts in the country. So here, we can no longer ask in Massachusetts any questions about past salary history. Right. And as the mayor just talked about, what we find is that often people will be asked what they made in the past and that the discussion and negotiation then gets anchored to that number.
Right.
Rather than an employer really looking at what is the role, what are the skills that are needed, the candidate in front of me, what do they bring to the table, and then benchmarking that salary around it.
Whereas if you're a woman who has historically been paid less and you are asked what you made, then your negotiation essentially is based on that lower figure, is it right?
It can put you at a disadvantage.
Right.
And one of the things that I would say is not just women. Because this bill applies to all prospective employees, it puts individuals who are applying for positions here in Massachusetts in a really great position because it gives them a new tool. They can negotiate without having to reveal that past salary history. And for example, here we find, looking at Bureau of Labor statistics, that white women are making about 81 cents on the dollar nationally, black men about 74%, Hispanic men 69%, black women 67%, Hispanic women around 62%. So this bill doesn't just help women, but it helps every employee who's going to negotiate in a new role.
Hmm. Walter, let me come to you with this next question. Why did it take so long? We mentioned that Massachusetts became the first state in the country to do this in 1945, yet there wasn't a whole lot of progress made since then. It's taken a long time to get here. Why?
It's taken a very long time, but we're finally here. The statute was amended 2 years ago, and clearly the need was recognized because there was this disparity within the workplace. So all of the prior attempts and the enforcement mechanisms of what was there in the act before clearly were not enough or sufficient to see it through.
Yeah. So is everything in this law that should be, that you'd want to see in this law?
It is. I find it, as Victoria has mentioned, it's one of the most comprehensive statutes that I have seen. There's an incredible both enforcement mechanism, but it really covers the gamut of how to approach this type of situation, because, of course, the bill applies to every single employer. Mm. So from the legal perspective, it's really quite unique that whether it's 1, 2, 5, 50, 500, 5,000 employees that you have, it's every single employer that has to comply.
And Victoria, what are the main reasons for this pay inequity that we've seen? I mean, is it run of the mill? I don't want to call it run of the mill. Is it discrimination? Are there other factors? How to explain it?
You know, there's a number of different factors, and the bill addresses most of them. So one, we see that individuals want to go into the job of their choice, but what we find is college major will impact what field you go in, whether or not your field is mostly a feminized field, feminized fields where it's mostly women make less. But broadly speaking, what we find is when individual managers are set in compensation, there's where you find the most discrepancy. Most individuals mean to get it right, but all of our biases and all of our preconceived notions really come in. What this bill does so well is it gives businesses an affirmative defense. Any business that within the last 3 years has done an internal wage audit and then has taken meaningful steps to mitigate any problems that they find, they have what's called an affirmative defense, which means that they're in a position where they are then protected under the law because they're trying to solve the problem. And though we had laws in the past, and you mentioned that we're the first state, just passing a law doesn't get it done.
Yeah.
You also need the awareness of it, and you need to give businesses some of the tools so they know how to do a wage audit and can get in there and fix it without worrying about it being discoverable.
I see. And so does this law, and Walter, I'll come to you on this, does this law give businesses those tools that they need to comply and to do the wage audit?
It does. It's really groundbreaking in a couple of areas, but one of the most important is that this affirmative defense, as it's called, the self-evaluation audit, is a complete defense to any damages and any kind of claim that's brought, so long as you've done it beforehand. And most importantly, the Attorney General has really outlined some meat on the bones of how to do this, because typically what would happen in statutes, and many of my clients or companies are out there floundering around to say, well, how do I do this?
Mm-hmm.
The AG has really delineated each steps on a kind of a how-to packet, how to do this self-evaluation audit. And it's meant to bring you into compliance, absolve you from any kind of penalties, fines, and of course, the hassle of litigation as well.
Listeners, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking about a new pay equity law in Massachusetts. Do you think it's going to work? Give us a call. Any questions you have about this new law, how it works, how it might not work, we'd like to hear from you. Let's go to Gordon, who's calling from Lakeville. Hey, Gordon, you're on the air. Go ahead. Thanks for the call.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, go ahead. What's on your mind?
So what's on my mind is basically this. You know, as I was discussing with the person who screened me, you know, unless we're willing to go to the place in public discourse, unless we're willing to go to the place of trying to implement social change in how society values the different services that are offered by the different sectors that seem to attract men versus women in the workforce, obviously manual labor, construction, things like that versus administrative services, healthcare. Just, you know, as the data may show, the men and women, you know, gravitate towards different sectors. Just it's already in place that those sectors have a different value to society. So if we really want to, you know, address the issue of the alleged 18 cents less per dollar per whatever that the women get than men, you know, we need to either take the conversation there or just accept that we're already, you know, the goal line has been achieved. Anybody and everybody, regardless of their gender or color of their skin, at this point in time, 2018, we have the freedom and the right to pursue whatever career that suits our interests, our values, and our monetary interests.
Okay, Gordon, I think we get the point, and let's let Victoria and Walter take a shot at that. I'll start with you, Victoria. I mean, I guess the problem that we're talking about is comparable pay for comparable work, equal pay for equal work, right?
So, Gordon, you raise a really interesting question. Often people say, well, how much of that wage gap, when you control for job choice, college major, level of education, years out of school, how much of that wage gap can't be explained by any individual choice? Hmm. And for example, the AAUW, the American Association of University Women, did a terrific study called Graduating to a Pay Gap that looks and controls for all of those factors. And what we see is 1 year after graduation, when you look at men and women, women have a 7% pay gap, and 10 years later, that jumps to 12%. And additionally, when we also look at choice, if we look at things like Title IX, when we opened the doors for women to be able to participate in sports, you saw hundreds and hundreds of percent increase in the number of women who wanted to participate. So often we cannot quite rate how much is actually, quote, free choice and how much is it that people look at models and examples. Hmm. What we know is seeing is believing. And when people are able to see different models and examples, we often see really different outcomes. So the bill also focuses on wage transparency, which means that now every employee in Massachusetts can share their own wages, what they make, if they choose. No one is compelled to. And if a colleague has shared their wages, or if you know your colleague's wage, you may also share that. There's, of course, an exception. If you're in an HR role, you may not share other people's wages. However, we now have information so individuals will have greater knowledge and may choose which careers they're going to go into and which roles they're going to stay in with a lot more data than in the past.
Interesting. I want to talk about this issue. Over the weekend, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, we heard him speaking earlier at the top of this segment with NPR's Scott Simon about a Boston initiative to help train women in salary negotiation. This is one of the things that the city of Boston is doing. And the mayor says it's trained more than 7,000 women over the last 3 years. Here's what the mayor said about the program.
When somebody offers you a job and a salary, that doesn't mean necessarily all the time that it's the end of the story. And oftentimes women, in just looking at studies, won't push the envelope, figuring it might cost them their job. But actually having different tips on how to do it is really helpful.
So I'll start with you, Walter, on this one. How important is that to sort of raise – we talked about raising awareness earlier in the segment, but here's a program that really gets people to think hard about how to negotiate in the best way possible for themselves.
It's a critical step, not only both to the statute, but really to the issue that the statute goes towards, which is, you know, what we've seen is that these are decades long, you know, if you will, reverberations of just a small cent percentage or a maternity leave, and then somehow you're 10% behind, and then you keep falling behind. So the piece that prohibits you from asking the salary, of course, goes to the heart of that. And it is pretty typical, at least many people and employers I know, they always ask because, of course, they're looking to do the best that they can as employers with the resources that they have. So they say, if I can buy it for less, sure, I'll ask about that.
Yeah, right.
But what this really gets to, and I've been involved in some efforts as well, looking at college graduates, women in particular, about how and the manners in which that they, you know, negotiate. And there's lots of information that either, A, that step is missed. And so it's clearly both in the socioeconomic piece, but also as an effectiveness piece, is really where you go to the heart of it. And I think it's the keystone of the law.
Let's try to get another call in. David is calling from Arlington. David, go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for the call.
Why? You're just talking about the kind of thing that I was asking myself when I made the call. A friend of mine, a woman, just recently took a new job in a very technical field, you know. There's not very many people who can do her job at all. And after she had a brief negotiation over her new salary, which is lots more than she has been making, they came to agreement very quickly on the salary. And then, of course, she's asking herself, wow, shouldn't I have asked for, you know, another 50 grand or something like that? What they have said then? And I think that women.
David, sorry, we're running out of time, so I'm going to jump in here. But I think where you might be going with that question, Victoria, I'll come to you with this thought. can you push too hard? I mean, when it comes to this idea of pushing as hard as you can, where's the line, I guess?
Well, Anthony and David, I think you've got it just right. When you're looking at negotiation, what the research shows and the wage negotiation trainings that the mayor is doing, much of that work is based on Hannah Riley Bowles' research, who's our co-director at the Women in Public Policy Program. And what we find is the issue isn't that, quote, women don't ask. The issue is that women are reading the audibles. And they know that when they negotiate, there's often social backlash. So when women negotiate, if they do several things, such as looking at an external benchmark saying, I've seen that wages in this type of field and this position are making X. If they bring in an external offer as well, I have another offer from Y company at this salary, and then say something relational. Mm-hmm. Anthony, if I was talking to you, I would say, Anthony, I really appreciate that offer. I really hope that we can work together and I can be on your team, and then negotiate. I don't sort of break the expectation that the listener may have that women shouldn't be negotiating.
Yeah.
So we find it's really critical for women to understand how they're perceived in negotiation. And until society catches up, women can use some extra tools and tips to apply to help ensure that their negotiation has no social backlash.
All right. Well, we could go on. Unfortunately, we're running out of time here, so I'm just going to say that Victoria Budson is founder and executive director of the Women and Public Policy Program at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Victoria, thank you so much. And Walter Foster, a partner with the firm Eckert Seaman, specializing in employment law. Walter Foster, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And listeners, you can leave a comment at RadioBoston.org or tweet us at Radio Boston about your views on pay equity in Massachusetts. Stay with us. Coming up, drink coffee to live longer. We'll speak to WBUR's Carrie Goldberg about that. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.